Accession number 11440, read 11.
Walter Hare, Reel 10. We were just up to the point where the war had, you'd been told by the civilians that the war had ended, and you were about to make an escape attempt by jumping over the school wall. Tell me what happened.
Yes, well, I got to the river, and I walked along the riverside, and I saw two pups, and I came to, I saw the very little city in front of me, so I thought I'd try somebody, civilians, and if somebody would give me a bit of bread. I was so hungry. But there was a German, a Uhland, I think it'd be, on horseback, spotted me, wanted to know where I'd come from. And they got me walking back, followed me with his horse. They handed me over to the guards. They pushed me inside to this schoolroom again, that not what I mean. And after a while, an officer came to interview me. He told me to stand up and face him. England, a Schweinehund, he called me, an English pig dog, stand up. So I stood up and he started monsters me, and I said, "You can't do that, the war's over." I wasn't sure that it was, but I only knew that these civilians had shouted that it was. And he swore at me, and he brought his revolver out, and he pointed it at me. I thought, this is it, the end of the road. But he shouted and carried on a bit. Now, I thought, keep your mouth shut. Don't say anything more. So don't aggravate him. So I did. I kept my mouth shut. I let him just swear at me and carry on. And at the finish, he whipped round and away he went. But he didn't pull his trigger, so I'm still here. So that was on the Sunday, on the 10th. On the 11th, they kept us locked in all day. And then we had, no, they let us out for a bit of exercise, and while we were out, some of the villains came round again and shouted, "The creek fish." So they got us inside again. And then it'd be about, I think, maybe beginning to get a bit dusk at night, they lined us up on the road and they marched us off. With sentries in charge again, with loaded rifles.
Had the guards' attitudes changed at all? Because this is now, the war was over then.
It not never changed at all.
They were just the same?
Just the same, yes. So we thought they were winners. We were still prisoners. And they were treating us such. Well, the march is a few miles, and probably were an old barracks. It was dusk by then, and they locked us in. And there was no light, of course, or anything. So we looked about and felt about, and we found there were wire beds. So we decided, I was with my brother, there was a lad called Lickard from York, who we'd got pally with. And we said, we'll try and get a bit of rest, because we didn't know what tomorrow might be. We thought, tomorrow they'd shoot us all, because either take us to a labour camp or something like that, because as prisoners, they'd keep us to do some work. We didn't get any sleep, but we did get a bit of rest. And the next morning, somebody tried the door, and it opened. So somebody had done it during the night. So I did a bit of talk to him. I said, "Be careful, somebody was going down." I said, "Don't." I said, "We've been told that we'll be shot if we try to escape. They'll very likely shoot us one at a time as we go out." So I said, "We mustn't." So we opened the door a little bit further, and nothing happened. So I volunteered to go out with another couple of chaps to see what happened. So we flung the door open and dashed out, expecting to hear a rifle fire shot, but nothing happened. There were no guards, nowhere to be seen. The place was empty. We were left, we didn't know where we were, with no food, no money, no daps, anything. So we were talking and didn't know what to do. There was my brother, and there were four of us. There was another lad called Jack, and there was this Lickard. And then I saw a priest walking down the village street. So I said to my brother, "I'll go and ask him where we are, where we can know something." I found this chap, and he could talk a little bit of French, and I could talk a little bit of German, I buried him on the sand. We wanted to get away. And the only place I could think of was France. I said, how do we get to France? And they looked at me. France? I said, yes. He asked, wonder if I had any kelt, any money or any food? I said, no. They said, well, how are we going to get there? I said, walk. There's no other way. So he said, he told me how many kilometres it was, rather 100 miles anyway. I said, yes, well, we'll have to walk. We can't stay here. Which way? So he pointed down the road, and he said, west. So I went back to these lads that I talked to him. I said to my brother, I said, well, we can't stay here. We've no food, and we haven't got, like, the guards have left us, evidently. We'll have to get to France, and it's down this road, left. Can anybody think of anything better to do? Well, nobody could, so we set off, the four of us, to walk.
Now, how about by now? I mean, with the guards disappearing...
They're gone.
Had you worked out who'd won the war by then?
No, we hadn't. We had no idea. We felt sure we'd lost. And they lost all interest in it, you see. We didn't know why they'd left us or what had happened, but the conditions that the British army was in, the French army as well, when we were captured, we thought nothing could stop the Germans. We thought all, and we'd heard nothing at all, so we had no information, and the Germans wouldn't tell us anything about it. I suppose they didn't want to tell us they were losing.
So you thought the guards just got gone?
We thought they just did it, yes.
And there was yourself, your brother Harold, someone called Bob Lickard.
Yes.
And someone called Jack.
Jack, yes.
And what happened to the other
100? I don't know.
You just decided on your
own? We decided on our own. We thought it was every man for himself. And we decided we were going to try to get to France somehow.
So what was this journey like?
Well, we slept. The first night we slept in under a hedge. And the second night, that was Tuesday night. And the second night we did the same. But then the Thursday morning it was raining. It was a very wet day. And Jack was feeling very poorly as well. But we did a bit of walking. And then it was so ill we decided we'd have a rest at the side of the road for a bit. It was still raining. But we sat down at the bank inside. And we talked a bit. Then we rested. And then my brother went to have a look at Jack. And he came back. He said, Jack's no more bother. He's gone. He's dead. We couldn't do anything for him. We just had to leave him. And we were so disheartened because we were lost, we were hungry, we were feeling pretty hopeless.
What had he died of?
We don't know, just exposure and lack of nourishment, I think.
Were you able to scavenge food? I mean, you know.
Wouldn't I know? They'd risk it. Because we were in enemy territory as far as we knew. We were still in Germany. And if we'd lost the war, which we expected we had, we thought if anybody caught us, that we didn't want taking back again and sent into a labour camp and like that. We wanted to get under our own soon to France if we possibly could.
So what happened after Jack died? Did you bury him?
No, we just left him at the roadside. And hope. You see, we all had our prisoner war numbers painted on our backs, and we hoped somebody would find him. And we were very despondent because we couldn't do anything for him, but we couldn't do anything for ourselves either. So we went on. And I think it was on the Saturday we came to a few houses where they were unoccupied at the roadside. And we checked them up, just a row, a small row. We checked them up to see if there was any food. We couldn't find any. We came across a quartermaster's of stores full of all sorts of things. And I got a pair of binoculars, and my brother got several things. Well, we picked a lot, but then we realised we couldn't carry them. We had enough to carry ourselves without carrying these. But we decided, it was getting on towards late at night, and we decided we'd stop there the night and try to get on the next day. We chose a house at the end of the row, and we checked it all over again to see if there was any food. There was no food, so we laid down. On the floor, stone floor it was. We laid with our backs to the window. We'd been laid there a bit. When my brother said there was a cupboard underneath the stairs, and he asked, "Has anybody looked in that cupboard?" We said, "No." So he went to have a look. He said, "Oh, it's a cellar." He went down the cellar and he came back after a while with two bottles of wine. Ooh, God said, "Is this wine?" And there was a little mug on the mantelpiece, and I got this mug down, and we poured some of this wine out, and somebody was just going to drink it, and I remembered that when they'd gone back to the Hindenburg Line, the Germans had left some wine, poisoned wine, in some of the houses, and some of our chaps had drunk it, and that was the end of them. And I said, "No, don't drink it. It'll be poisoned. Then I left it on purpose. It'll be poisoned." So we put the bottles down. And after a bit, somebody must have said, "Let's try it and see if it's all right." So somebody had a sip, and it wasn't me. I don't know which of them it was, but we watched him to see if anything happened, and nothing happened. So we finished wine. We had a good night's rest. And we set off the next morning in good trim. We had something, a bit of stamina now.
Didn't the wine make you drunk in that state you were in?
Well, we were waking, we were a bit fuzzy, but we worked it off.
Now, during this walk so far, had you been avoiding?
We'd avoid everybody.
How'd you done that?
We came to the village. That's why it took us longer than it need have done, because we avoided, on the main road, we did a circuit of route to avoid any, because we didn't want to be captured again. We were free, and we wanted to remain free.
Did you see any civilians or any
troops? We saw them. Yes, at one place, we heard a band. As we were walking on this road, we heard a band. And we said, "Oh, there's a band playing." So we got behind the... We climbed up, there was a bank, and we got behind the hedge and waited. And after a time, there was a battalion of German troops with a band in front of them marching past, and they were all singing and shouting and going on. So we realised we'd lost the war then, because they were all so jolly. And we said, good job we'd got out of sight, because they might have done us in. We let them get well past. And we thought we'd let them get well away. Then after a bit, we heard some rifle shooting. And I thought, "Oh, Lord, this is how we've kept where we were." And after a while, the two little lads came along. They had a gun each, and they were shooting at the telegraph poles, the lights on the telegraph poles. So we were glad we stayed where they might have shot us. They'd found these rifles, evidently, or maybe in the trenches, because they were so far away. And after that, we got to the first lot of barbed wire. We got through the first lot of trenches. We climbed through lots of trenches. And finally, we came to the barbed wire. We climbed across that, got to the into no man's land. We went over no man's land and got over the wire. And we said, "We're home."
And there was no one about?
Nobody about. Not a soul. It was clear, complete... No wonder. It was complete devastation. It was absolutely terrible. And we realised that nobody would want to come there, perhaps for years.
And whereabouts was this?
We didn't know. No idea where we were. But we knew we got to France, because there were French uniforms and bits of French equipment laying about. So we knew that French had been occupied that part. So we said we were all right. There was a huge wood in front of us. Big forest. I think it was the Argonne Forest I found out later. So I said, I think I was the fittest of the three of us that were left. We were all in pretty bad shape, but I think I was the best of the three. And I said, "Look, let's walk along the side of the wood until we come to a road. We mustn't try to get through the wood, we'll get lost. We'll try to go until we come to a road leading through the wood." And we'd gone maybe half a mile when my brother flopped down in the shell hole. He says, "I can't go any further." He said, "You go on and find somebody that perhaps can help us." I said, "No, I'm not leaving you." And then Bob flopped down as well. He says, "I can't go any further, Walter, I'm done for." I said, "I'll tell you what we'll do." I said, we'll have 10 minutes rest or so. And then I said, we'll get up and try and push on a bit longer." So I laid down to rest with him. And I knew I'd never get up. And no willpower, no strength either. And I thought to myself while I was laid there, "I wonder if they ever find us. It'll perhaps be years to come. Nobody wants to come to a devastated place like this. If they'll know that we're British troops and our way home, but we'll be in such a condition they won't know that we're even human beings." And how long we laid there, I'll never know. But suddenly we heard the whistle of a railway engine. And my brother and me, we all three jumped up, got some strength from somewhere. We listened, and it came again. When we all think we dashed into the wood stupidly. But we found a road eventually, and we set off down this road. And we got, I don't know how we'd gone. We lived, more or less, you see, and eventually we came to, we saw two figures in uniform ahead of us, and we decided we'd better give ourselves up. We couldn't last any longer. We'd have to give it up. So we kept going forward. And when they got near, it was quite dusk now, we found there were two French soldiers in French uniform. We tried to explain who we were, but they didn't believe us. So we turned around, we said, look, numbers on our backs. And they were painted our prisoner war numbers. Mine was 2351. So they agreed then. We weren't traps or something. We were genuine, and we explained that any of them were so up. We could speak a bit of French, of course. They were so upset. So they took us back. They had a hut. They were an advance party of the hut at the end of this wood. And they took us there and gave us a drink. They only had water, but we were glad of anything. Then they decided to take us to their headquarters, which Lowderville, it was a mile or two away. And we said we didn't think we could walk. They said, oh, there were about a dozen of them. They all turned out. They said they'd take us down. And they took us to Lowderville. And they were building houses there with the French soldiers.
And when did you find out the war was over?
These lads told us. They said the war's over. And we've won. We said, won? Yes, we've won. And they said, you're in all... they told us we'd walked from Zabrucken. We told us about this stuff. They said, this is Zabrucken. You've walked from Zabrucken. You've walked right through Alsace-Lorraine. And we said, well, we thought it was in Germany. He said, well, you still were and still are. But it's got to be handed over back. The Germans took it off the French after Franco-Prussian War. And it's got to be handed back now, so it's going to come back to France. Well, they found a sergeant, and he got some cokes and told Rebecca something to eat, and they gave us all. He said they hadn't much till they got the rations in the morning. They gave us a bowl of real coffee, not hers, that's a book. And they gave us, because we'd been having coffee to drink in Germany, barley, made from barley, I think it was. There's that horrible stuff. No milk or sugar in it, of course. But this was real coffee. And they'd only some sausages, some cold, they gave us two cold sausages. And I've spoken to the Probus clubs, in several Probus clubs around here, and I've told them this tale about escaping. And I've said that the best sausage and best coffee I've ever tasted in my life. And it was. Well, the next morning, of course, the French officer interviewed. He spoke very good English. He'd been with a British division, an interpreter or something. Liaison officer, and he asked us how we'd managed to get through, and we told him it was this sound of this engine that had got us going again. Oh, he said it was the sound that made you move. We said, yes, he said, right. We aren't supposed to move forward for 14 days, but we're going to do. And he got all his bands made and some more troops, anything they could bag, and told them to get out into the wood and make a noise. And somebody, and later on, some of the chaps. They got a lot more of our chaps coming. They'd been wandering behind us, evidently. And it attracted them. They went to where they heard the noise. And somebody got them back, you see. The next day, we stayed there a couple of days.
What state were you in? I mean...
Terrible state. Filthy. With that after that long walk, you see, and not being able to get the water. We'd got cleaned up a bit before we'd left, so we weren't really too, not as bad as we'd been. But they moved us on to Nancy, and the American Air Force there, they took us over, gave us baths and shaved us and cut our hair and made us into human beings again.
And did you have trouble with eating again? Because sometimes yes. You eat too much after you've been starved.
We were told. We were warned. They got some British force up there and told us to be very, very careful. Not overdo it. I sold my... I kept my binoculars and I kept that little mug. I still have it. My son knows it now, because I told him, I said, people might not know what this is all about. You know the story.
The one you drunk the wine out of.
The one we drunk the wine out of. And they tried to take it off me when I got to the British Army again. I said, no, this is over here. I'm taking it home. You can leave me, but I'm going to take this home. I had a job when I got it home. With documents, I sold to a woman in Nancy to get some money to send the telegram home to tell them I was on my way.
So what happened next?
Well, the Americans took us over and looked well after us. They managed to get some British troops up, and they've got uniforms. We got properly dressed as British soldiers again, in old uniform. And we stayed there a day or two. And then they got a hospital train up, and I came down on a stretcher with a nurse to wait and look on me and bring me cream crackers. I'd forgotten there was such things as nurses and cream crackers. And we got to Cali, then to Dover and home. And that was the end of it.
What happened when you got home?
When I got home, the first morning at home, when it got to dinner time, I thought that my brother hadn't got home. They kept him behind at Cali because he'd got a uniform, but he hadn't got a cap. And no one let him come without his cap. And he was sitting next to me, and I said, but he's my brother, we want to be home together. He said, it didn't matter, he was a British Army now. He had to be properly dressed. And he stayed behind. When I got home, Mother said, where's your brother? I said, oh, he'll be coming on later. She said, I know. You've been telling me that in your card, you told me that he was alive. I know, he's not, is he? I said, he is. She said, I know he isn't. Because she said, I've had a man out of the tank brigade come in to see me, and he buried him at 3-3 Cemetery. I said, he never did, because he's with me. She said, look, I've the letter here, written to him. This was the letter they found on him. So I said, well, I know what's happened. Somebody, while we were holding that line, somebody, a friend of his, has tried to get, was coming up and was going to give him the letter, and he's got killed on the way. A lad called Harrison was a pal of his. So he'll be married as somebody else. So my brother got to the war office and told him that he had a grave at 3-3 Cemetery, and it wasn't his, it was somebody else's.
Now, what day, do you know the date you got to the French? I should have asked you earlier. The date. Roughly speaking.
Yes, well, we left on, you see, it was, the armistice day was on a Monday, 11th, and we got there the following Sunday, so that was Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, third, or Friday, Saturday, Sunday, 6 days later.
Did you have some leave before you were demobilised?
Yes. The first day at home, at dinner time, I saw there were just my mother and father and me at home, and there were seven plates on the table. I said, what are these for? There's only three of us. Well, she said, with some my father was a brickworks manager. She said, with some four German prisoners working in the brickworks. And I tried to make them a bit of dinner, you know, because I thought that the Germans would be looking well after you. I said, Mother, they gave us nothing. I said, I've got down to 7 stone. Yes, but you're back home and there, you know. She was that sort of woman, you see. She said, and so I make them a bit of dinner, you know. So I thought you'd take it out to them. I says, all right, Mother, put some arsenic on it and I'll take it out. She says, don't be like that. You're back home.
Did you bear a grudge long?
No. I said, all right, then, I'll take it. So I took these German prisoners, a plate full of same food as we were having, out. And I told them some of the conditions in Germany, they wouldn't believe me. There was one chap there, was a Bavarian, he was a nice chap. And he used to want to, each day, he wanted to have a bit of talk about what it was like and what they'd done to us. And, you know, he got to us for a long time, right up to that last war. We kept in contact with him.
Well, how long was it before your brother got home then?
Following day. It was only a day later.
That must have relieved your
mother. It did relieve her when she saw him coming. Because she kept telling the other day, I know it, you might as well tell me the truth. I said, no, look, you'll finally be here tomorrow.
She had the cards, though.
She'd had the card, but she thought I'd faked it.
So how much leave did you have?
I think we got a fortnight's leave.
Did you put, weight back on? Or?
Oh, yes, I began to eat, not normally, but we had to be careful. We'd been warned we had to be careful. We'd been starved for so long, we could do ourselves more harm than good. And then I had to report back at York, and then the next day I went up to Whitley Bay, to a convalescent home at Whitley Bay.
They treat you there?
Oh, very good. We're treated as invalids there. We didn't do any parades or any arms bashing or anything like that. We were there as invalids to be made better, to get ourselves well again.
Were you looking forward to demobilisation?
Yes, I was. I wanted to be out as quick as I could. And then, well, I'd had enough of the army. I joined for the durational. The durational come. I'd done my bit. I wanted to be out again, back to civil life. We got forms to fill in. You see, I realised that it just depends what sort of work you were doing, how you were demobilised. There were certain grades which in industry where they wanted you back at work. Now, as a grocer, I wasn't. Very important, because there were plenty of ghosts, a tenner penny. But my father, brickworks, I knew. Bricks would be required because there were a lot of building wanted doing repair work. You see, they did draining tiles, roofing tiles, all kind of things. So I said to my father, I said, if I put myself down as a brick and tile worker, can you find me a job for a week or two? So he said, oh yes, you can come and work the yard. I said, all right, so I'll fill myself in as a... And told me my discharge papers that put me down. This. Somebody questioned me. He said, "Why you? Well, I thought you were a ghost." I said, "Yes, but I'll just work for a week or two in the brickyard." So I got an early discharge with that.
Did you get any gratuities or bonuses or?
No, nothing. I lost my pay all the time I was in Germany. I didn't get any army pay. Got nothing. And
did you resent that?
No, not at the time, I didn't. I wanted to be out.
Do you resent it now?
No, the only thing I resent is I didn't get a pension. I went in as A1, I came out as B2. And the only examination I did, they felt my pulse, felt my heart, and thought it was burning, looked at me and saw I was still breathing, so I was A1. But they passed me off as B2. I ought to have prepped, because I'd been gassed as well as being slightly wounded. I ought to have, and I got reduced to a terrible state. I should have pressed for another exam, but I wanted to be out. I was so anxious. Now, I know a chap, a friend of mine, and he went out and he got a wound in his eye. The first day he was out. He had one day in France, and he died a fortnight since. He had a full pension all his life. And he's done his work as usual. He's driven the car till he was turned 90. And that's what I object to. About one day in the trench, he's got a small wound straight away. And he gets a full pension. Somebody
else. Immediate trouble with your chest, you told me.
Oh, no, I didn't.
Did you have any trouble with your leg? No,
it healed up all right.
And you didn't have any trouble with it in the camp?
No, it healed up all right.
So you did a week or two at the brickworks?
Yes.
And then what did you do? Were you able to get a job as a grocer?
Well, they had to, if you had the job and you'd volunteered before the war, they had to give you a job back if you wanted it, you see. There was some stipulation. But he'd got a couple of girls working in the shop where I'd worked, and evidently we had a bit of talk. They told me, they said that Mr. Hamlin was the man, they said that, unfortunately, they'd have to leave because I was come back and I'd want my job back, and he would rather keep them. So I said, oh, would he? I said, well, have a word with him about that. But however, one day, Mother said to me, oh, Mr. Lambert would like to see you. Now, there was another shop in the village. He was a chemist and a grocer. You did that in villages sometimes. One side of the shop was the chemistry, and he did all dispensing, that kind of thing, and the other was grocery. And he said, he wants to see you. So I went down to see him. He said, will you come and work for me, Walter? I said, I'd love to. He said, I'd like to have you. He said, because I know about you. He said, when can you start? I said, tomorrow if you want me. He says, all right, Monday morning. And he said, I'll give you £2.10 a week. Well, I didn't know what money was worth. Well, I suppose that was a reasonable wage in them days, £2.10 a week, I don't know. It was more than I'd been getting when I was joined up anyway. And so I went. And I enjoyed that because I was learning dispensary. I got to be able to dispense medicine because we had doctors in the village and they used to bring the prescriptions in to us. We dispensed them all. Doctors didn't dispense their own in them days.
You stayed there quite some time.
He said, the biggest shop and there's 5 branches. And he said, I'm sure he'd like you. So he said, so I go to him and ask for an appointment. And they asked me to come the following Thursday. And I came and he said, well, can you start? I said, Monday. So I started on the Monday morning and I worked for them. Till I got to be manager there, and I did all the window dressing, got prizes for them, and when he packed up, he sold his business, and I told him I'd try to, if I had one of the branch shops, I'd start on my own. He said, how are you fixed for money? I said, well, I can get a mortgage, I think, on my house is my own. He said, I'll put you £1,000.